Monday, March 11th, and this is Season 3, Episode 29 of the Four Star Spurs Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony. With me this week, we have Rick.
Hello.
Tommy.
What's up?
And Kevin.
What's up, guys?
Hi, everybody. This is Anthony. I am gutted to report that we had a technical difficulty and we lost our whole first half of the podcast. So we had tons of good points to talk about with both Southampton and Dortmund. We had some great questions that we answered. We had one of our best conversations ever, and the whole thing was gone. None of us have enough time to record the first half over again, but we do have a terrific second half for you guys to listen to, and we'll come back and get everything right next time around with when we return from this break in 2 weeks. But for now, we are going to go to our halftime segment. So we have Tommy's back page update and Catherine's Spurs ladies update.
Hi everyone, I'm Tommy, and this is your back page update. Rumor and innuendo from The Sun is saying that Notts County teenager Keon Atete is being lined up by Spurs after impressing on trial after scoring twice for the U18 squad. Well, this would be another cliche signing for Spurs. Atete has made 6 appearances for Notts County after signing his first professional contract in November. I can only assume scouts will continue to track him. If things progress, can see a signing happen. Notts County is dead last in League 2, have money problems, and we do have a recent track record of developing youth. The Guardian is alleging that Spurs will battle Juventus, Inter Milan, and AC Milan over Fiorentina winger Federico Chiesa, who has a £70 million release clause. Of course, this would be an expensive signing. This rumor could be propped up based on the potential of Christian Eriksen potentially leaving. There's no way that Chiesa could be brought in as competition. This guy has it all in terms of what Spurs would want. He's fast, budding young talent with an eye for goal. The Daily Express is reporting that Spurs, along with Arsenal, are chasing Villarreal's midfielder Pablo Fornals' signature. It's possible that Pochettino would have access to larger transfer funds since the squad hasn't spent a dime in transfers in over a year. So we do have some potential transfer power if we choose to use it. Fornals has been known to be flexible as he can play a variety of midfield positions. I'm Tommy, and this is your back page update.
Cool.
Finally back with my latest Spurs Ladies update. Now I have a lot to cover, so listen up. First off, I last left you with Spurs Ladies awaiting a London derby with a league match against Millwall on January 27th. And I'm back with this segment bearing good news. Spurs Ladies beat Millwall 3-2, with new-ish signing Emma Beckett leading the charge and grabbing her first goal for the club. Next up on February 3rd was a Women's FA Cup away match against Crystal Palace. Spurs Ladies were again victorious, defeating Palace 3-0. With 2 wins going into another league match on February 10th, Spurs Ladies had all the confidence as they beat London Bees again with that 3-0 scoreline. So after 3 consecutive wins, Spurs Ladies had a large task at hand as Cheshunt played host on February 17th to the Women's FA Cup home match against FA Women's Super League side Manchester City. And may I remind you that as part of the WSL, Manchester City's women's team is a side of full professionals, many of whom play for their national teams, including England's Steph Houghton, Karen Bardsley and Jill Scott, and Canada's Janine Becky. Manchester City defeated Spurs Ladies 3-0, which means Spurs Ladies are now out of the Women's FA Cup. Regardless of the scoreline or the implications that Spurs Ladies are now out of the competition, it's a performance to be proud of, especially in front of a record attendance at Cheshunt with 1,158 supporters. Then on February 20th, with Juan Foyth in attendance, Spurs Ladies had their last game for a few weeks, and the team sure showed up. Spurs Ladies beat Leicester 1-0 after an Angela Addison 96th-minute game winner. Now, after a break from play, Spurs Ladies have three upcoming league matches scheduled in March. Spurs Ladies play an away game on Tuesday, March 12th against Aston Villa, followed by a home match against Sheffield United on Sunday, March 24th, and another home match against Manchester United on Sunday, March 31st. Currently, Tottenham Hotspur Ladies sit in first in the FA Women's Championship table with 39 points after having played 15 matches, winning 13, drawing 0, and losing 2 games altogether. Manchester United is close behind with 34 points, but only having played 13 games. And now onto a few more anecdotes. Rhianna Dean, although she did not win, was nominated for the Women's Player of the Year at the 2019 London Football Awards. This was the same award ceremony that also included Mauricio Pochettino being nominated as Manager of the Year and Harry Kane and Heung-min Son as candidates for Premier League Player of the Year. Son and Mauricio won their respective awards, with Vivian Miedema of Arsenal Women claiming the Women's Player of the Year. Also, Megan Wynne was called up to the Wales national team and was a substitute for both matches against the Republic of Ireland, February 28th's goalless draw and March 5th's 1-0 loss. Additionally, a big congratulations to forward Sarah Wiltshire for being named the FA Women's Championship Player of the Month for January. Also, the second award given to Tottenham Hotspur Ladies for January goes to manager Karen Hells, as well as the rest of the coaching staff, including head coach Juana Moros, for being awarded the FA Women's Championship Manager of the Month trophy. All right, that's my segment for this time. As always, if you have any Spurs or Spurs Ladies related questions, shoot them over to me on Twitter to my personal handle, @KatherineRupp, or hit up 4-Star Spurs on Twitter or Facebook. That's all for me this time. Come on, you Spurs, and come on, you Spurs ladies.
Thanks, Tommy, and thanks, Catherine. Good segments both. Tommy, on your segment, I was kind of interested in some of the transfer talk. We have a couple questions on transfers. Let's start with Shub's question first.
Yeah, Shub's on Twitter, as usual, the real Shubin. With Zidane back at Real and presumably with Perez. Man, that's a lot of presumably's, Shub. Shub's, Jesus, I can't talk. All these same-sounding things. And Solskjaer back at, or most likely taking the United job, has Poch lost some bargaining chips when it comes to transfers this summer?
That doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, to me, anything, he's... Those are the two places Poch might have.
I'll try to make sense of it. Okay, so for anybody that doesn't know, Zidane is back as manager. Solskjaer probably going to be manager.
Have they announced? Is it permanent or is it just? It is permanent.
Yeah, and the and for anybody that doesn't know, if you're in Spain, the max that you can have as a caretaker manager type position is 2 weeks. Zidane really? He ain't doing that. So. So pretty much what it is because before both clubs could have been in limbo with Solari and potentially no manager. So because of that, has Poch lost any potential transfer power in the summer? Does that make more sense, I guess?
I don't think so. I don't see why those two guys.
I'm trying to translate.
If anything, it opens up Bale to be available to go wherever he wants because him and... Zidane don't get along. And then I don't know how
I think
Solskjaer
I can tackle
United,
this.
Maybe because he's a United guy and he can sell him, but like he's literally never signed anybody that anybody's ever heard of. I mean, he coached in fucking Norway, right?
The thing I think he's getting at is if those two jobs were available, let's say, Poch should say to Levy, give me some money or I'll go to one of those two jobs.
I mean...
That's what I think...
He could also say that with PSG or any other
job
out there right
now. It makes no difference whatsoever. It makes no difference.
Those were probably... I mean, those are the two he's been linked to the most. But, Anthony, you think you have it figured out.
Well, I think that there is something to this. Like, Poch, I think he's staying with us, but... Recent form, I think we have to be worried about the whole thing falling apart. I think if we don't turn this around after we come back from this little break, I think what Shubes is getting onto here is that there's going to be a lot of coach movement and a lot of teams trying to make big waves in this transfer window that comes up, and we have to make moves. We've got a new stadium. We're hoping to have Champions League play there. We have a lot of holes to fill. You were talking about the midfield, Rick. So we have to fix that midfield problem, but then we also have to worry about we're likely to lose Eriksen, we're likely to lose a bunch of players, and we're going to talk about a question of that in a second, but we're looking at a lot of holes to plug, and going to be tough to do with a competitive window with other teams looking for players. A lot of other coaches that might be on the move looking to make big moves. Yeah, I think that's what Shubes is getting at.
That's always the case. So I don't get why Zidane and Solskjaer is making any difference to Poch. I don't get that.
I'll try to answer this the way I interpreted Shubes. I would say in terms of the bargaining chips when it comes to the transfers, it's the same it's always ever been. The biggest issue, of course, is always the money that Levy will either pony up for transfers or for salary. For example, if, for argument's sake, if we got a big-name player for $300,000 a week, we're going to have to pay Kane that much. We're going to have to increase Ali's salary.
But what Solskjaer and Zidane got to do with any of that?
Because they're... I don't know. They have more staff.
We're trying to answer the question,
yes.
Rick.
Yeah, they have more. They're.
I mean, Zidane, I kind of understand because, like, obviously Madrid are going to go out and buy some people.
And everyone wants to play for him.
But I don't get why he lumps United into the mess because, like.
But the kind of players they're going to go for. I'm not the kind of players they're going to afford anyway.
Regardless, so. Are they really going to go splash that much cash? I mean, they're playing fantastic. I mean, I think they have some holes they need to plug, but it's not like us, where we have a lot of fucking holes.
It's holes in different places, let's just say.
Right. So,
I think their defense is a little suspect, but they had the lingering issue of De Gea with his contract. He's not been very pleased. He wants an extension with a lot more money. But
our defense is a little suspect if we lose Toby.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll just say this. Kind of what Rick said. We're chasing different players.
Right.
So the one summer we did splash a little bit of cash at that time was 2013 with the whole Bale 7. Aside from Eriksen, Lamella, I mean, Chadli kind of panned out to a certain degree, but he didn't play defense. Everybody else more or less sucked. Kirakesh sucked. I know Rick loves Soldado, but he wasn't lighting up the scoreboard. When it comes to players that Pochettino wants or that we could get, we got to think smart. We got to look for those diamonds in the rough. And we're not looking for those Galacticos. Pochettino always wants the personality that can fit in the system as well. He doesn't want the centers of, you know, Yunus Kabul, Nabil Bentaleb, Adebayor, etc.
Stambouli.
Fuck you. There's no proof that he was a dissenter. But
except for he went out with all the same in this like same transfer window as the rest of them. He was in there. It was all the French speaking guys except Hugo, basically.
No, that's true.
But again, you're contradicting yourself because
how?
Because you're saying should be saying. The question is, how does Solskjaer and Zidane affect our transfer policy? But and then you're saying. But we're not in the market for the players that they're in the market for.
You just said the same thing.
I know.
But he's saying the question doesn't make sense. I don't know.
I'm trying to decipher what Shub said just like everybody else here.
It doesn't make any sense.
So don't blame me for my answer. Blame Shub. No, nothing personal, but...
you're trying to explain the...
Guys...
In my own point of view. Right,
guys, let's move the questions along.
Contradicting yourself.
You just gave me no evidence of me contradicting myself.
You just said... We're not in the market for the players that they're in the market for.
Yeah.
So how does that affect us?
It doesn't.
Boys.
You just said the same things. Well, so you were essentially...
I want to move the questions along, okay? Like, this is not this is not a productive conversation.
Okay, let me just...
Thank you for the question, Tubes. I thought it was a valid question, and you heard my answer to it. We have a second question on transfers. Let's move it along to that.
Yeah, it's from our good friends to the north, Milwaukee Spurs. Toby, Erickson, LaMelo, Trippier. For all four, who will be here next season and who won't?
I hope Trippier's not.
We missed out on a huge payday for him.
Yeah. Really, it might only be LaMelo.
Even then, who knows? I'm going to throw in another name. I wouldn't be surprised if Vertonghen left because he has a similar situation. His contract, or since Alderweireld, he got his contract extended to 2020. Vertonghen's contract right now is at till 2020. So I wouldn't be surprised if he left as well. In addition to that, I've said in the past, I don't know if anybody really noticed, but I wouldn't be surprised if Dyer took a back seat next season in a more utility role as usual. Because with the loss of Dembele, you know, it's Dembele kind of masks his weaknesses. So whoever we bring in, whether it be whoever I want, which is Van de Beek, I don't know if Dyer can cover that flack. It's unfortunately, with the lack of transfer activity, this has kind of put us in a big hole.
So here goes Tommy again. We listed four players.
I was literally going to say, well, Tommy, of those four.
I know, but I'm adding more to it.
But you didn't talk about a single one of the four.
I did say Trippier.
Yeah, you did.
But, like, okay, so in addition 25%. To that, LaMelo, I think he'll stay because we're not going to maximize profit on that. I love LaMelo, but, you know, who is going to pay money that Levy wants? Alderweireld, like I said, with Vertonghen, he's probably going to leave. Who was the other person?
I don't think Vertonghen's going to leave.
Erickson.
Erickson, I wouldn't be surprised. I just don't think we will because the other issue is, you know, like him and Toby, they want a huge contract. Levy's not going to front that money before we see the revenue from that, I don't think. But that's just me.
In order of likelihood to stay, I think it's LaMelo. A huge part of me really thinks Toby is. Just because of, like, the way he is on social media. I don't know if you guys follow him as much, but he talks about how excited he is for the new stadium and how much he wants to play there and how awesome it's going to be all the time.
But that could
be 10 times more than any other player, including Harry or anybody.
That could be fishing for a new contract, though.
I mean, really, if that's what he's doing, then fucking good riddance. Get the fuck out of my club using social media to try and pander to Levy. You think Levy's reading Toby's tweets? I don't know.
No,
but I bet Levy's never been on Twitter in his life.
No, but I think the fan base is.
Yeah. You know, but all it's doing is it's building up this mentality, like I just said. I mean, it's making me think, shit, maybe he will fucking stay and hang around. But I think, realistically, order of likelihood to stay is LaMelo, Trippier, Toby. I think Erickson's gone.
I don't care if Erickson goes. He's so inconsistent.
But if he leaves, we 100% have to buy somebody.
We have to.
We will. It's just
we have to 100% buy now anyway.
And it will not be, even with his inconsistency, we're not buying somebody of his caliber.
Yeah, but we said that when Modric left. We said that when Carrick left. And now we're saying with Erickson.
See,
it's the same thing.
Rick, I have to disagree. I think Erickson is, for us right now, irreplaceable. And you can say that it was like that when other people left, all you want. But when we lose Erickson this year, now we have the problem of we have a midfield that we never replaced. So we have to replace the midfield. Now we need our key attacking midfielder that keeps control of the game, keeps the pace of the game going.
But he doesn't. That's the problem.
He hasn't been lately, but he certainly does when he's on.
Say he can.
And when Erickson doesn't play, we suffer. Maybe not quite as bad as when Dele Alli didn't play. But
we're suffering now because he's not playing very well. So why not sell him?
Things might change because what is he, like 26?
What I'm talking about is like So we're talking about losing him. We're talking about losing one of our best center backs. And we have two young kind of suspect ones that make a lot of mistakes. I think they're very talented players. But Sanchez and Foyth make a lot of errors. And they're not going to carry the team in the way Vertonghen and Toby would. So now we have like a defense issue. We have a midfield issue. And we have an Eriksen issue. And we need to find players to replace all those guys. And Llorente's probably not going to be around much longer. If he is, like, he's really not the key that we need for the backup striker role that we've always needed to begin with. So we're adding on to the problems. And your Eriksen problem, like, oh, well, we always say that it's irreplaceable, but he's not. In this case, it's such an insurmountable problem with the other problems that we have when you compound them together, that it is an issue that I think you're ignoring, Rick.
Yeah, and if I guarantee if you go back and listen to most of our podcasts from last season, you'll hear us talk about the two most important players on the squad are Dembele and Eriksen, and we're going to lose both of them basically in the same season. That's just like ridiculously hard to replace, no matter what team you are. Even if you're fucking Real Madrid or...
But Dembele needs replacing anyway.
Agreed. He needed to be replaced this year, though. Yeah. And then you only have one of the two, and then you have Dembele's replacement already working his way into the squad, probably starting by this point.
Well, put it this way. I think the only player on our team is irreplaceable is Harry Kane. Everybody else is replaceable. Every single other
player. I mean, yes, there are replacements out there, but... Are there replacements that we can afford that Daniel Levy will play?
If they sell Eriksen for a good sum of money, we can afford basically anybody.
Yeah.
See, well, that's the thing. I don't think it's going to happen where we're going to directly replace Eriksen, because it's kind of like Gareth Bale, where how...
No, I think we've gone down that route, and I don't think we'll do that again.
Do you think Mora and Lamella can pick up the slack when Eriksen leaves,
though? No. We need to sell Eriksen.
And buy
Eriksen.
He's saying not buy seven guys, buy one guy.
Buy one or two, basically. If we sell Eriksen for 100 million, buy £250 million.
But
okay, here's my question, though. Anybody in Europe or South America or wherever, who do you think could be that direct replacement?
Oh, I have no idea.
Okay, because I...
But I'm just... Sure,
I don't disagree. It's just, I think with the previous track record of how we dealt with transfers,
we've never bought a £50 million player. Never.
Sanchez never. Is the closest, right?
Well, like, yeah, 48. But I'm just saying there is. I'd be more inclined to believe that we're going to beef up a central midfielder and then get somebody that has the potential of Eriksen and then work it that way. And then kind of like with the Bale 7, we overcompensate in other areas of the field.
I doubt we're going to do the Bale 7 again. I doubt that. But.
Well, not that extreme, but I think we might.
The Eriksen 5?
No chance.
Yeah, I don't know about Eriksen 5. Maybe Eriksen 3 or 2.
But even 2. Say we sell him for 100, right? Fucking everybody's going for 50 million now.
Yeah.
Like, 50 million is not a lot of... That's like... An above average player, right?
Yeah, but for England.
But
Man City got a Gundogan for 52 million. I mean, he's one of the best players I've ever seen.
Wait, who?
Gundogan.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely fantastic. And that was 2 years ago they bought him. I just think now.
Our purchasing hasn't been that good lately, though.
Like,
because we haven't purchased.
Not since Dele Alli, I don't think we've made a purchase that's been that great of a bargain.
Well, again, we've never spent $50 million on a single player.
And that's kind of scary, right? Because, like...
Yeah, because, like, for example, when we broke the barrier twice with Soldado and Lamella...
Pretty much.
They're, like, heavy expectations. I mean, Lamella, I don't know if exceeded anybody's expectations.
He's been serviceable. I mean, like,
I think he's...
But at the time, he was a record transfer, right?
Yeah,
so
30 million.
For your record transfer at the time, I would say he hasn't lived up to that.
Look.
No.
Unfortunately, no.
And to go into a transfer window saying, you know, we're going to lose all these guys, even if we just lose Toby and Erickson, right?
But
we got to replace both of those and a midfielder.
But to be fair, we spent $30 million on Lamella, and we got $30 million worth of talent. He is a talented
True.
Player.
100%.
The only reason we don't get value for money is because he keeps getting injured. Now, that's not his fault, and that's not our fault. It's not anybody's
True.
Fault.
True. But we also, we don't really know, like, if he was healthy the whole time, what would have happened. Who knows?
Tim Sherwood actually broke his back.
Yeah, like, Sherwood supposedly hated him.
But,
fuck,
but
who knows?
But we bought a very, very talented
Agreed.
Player.
Yeah.
It just didn't work out. Again, we need someone. We need a midfield. We need more than one midfielder. If Erickson doesn't want to stay, then go. I don't think we have much choice.
Yeah.
Vertonghen has never made any noises about leaving. Toby won't sign, so I think Toby's probably gone. Trippier. I hate to get on his back because I hate to jump on the bandwagon, but he's just been bloody awful.
I wish we had sold him last summer.
Yeah, I think we need to upgrade both fullbacks, basically. Yeah. So, I think Danny Rose is on his last legs. Ben Davis is just not good enough.
Juan Bissaka. That's what we need.
Ore is good, but we can't trust him yet.
So this is two more positions that you're pointing out, and I think that proves my point even more that this is getting insurmountable. Like what we need to accomplish
yeah,
in
but
this
I don't
window.
Think you're saying, we shouldn't sell Erickson. I don't think we're going to have any choice.
Aside from central,
I'm saying replacing Erickson is going to be extremely difficult while trying to fill the rest of those holes as well. Like either we replace Erickson or we replace the rest of those holes. I don't see Daniel Levy doing both. I just don't.
Okay, hold on. If we kept Erickson and we had to replace all the holes, we'd have to spend money. What difference does it make if we have to replace the holes?
Wait.
And replace Erickson, but you replace Erickson with the Erickson money. So I don't see where the problem is.
What do you mean you don't see where the problem is? Like, I don't see what your point is. Like, yes, Erickson would bring us a lot of money if we sold him, but we still have to buy all of those players. And
right, you're missing the point.
And you're assuming that we're going to get the right player.
All right, you're like, missing the point.
It's one window. We're not going to get the right player every time.
What Rick is, I actually agree with Rick in a way here. What he's saying is, with all the holes that we have, we're going to have to spend money. But if you sell Erickson, you immediately get the money to replace him, probably plus some, because there's no way we're spending $100 million on one guy.
That's it.
So
you replace Erickson.
But the problem with that is when you are quote unquote replacing Erickson, you're not getting a like for like switch, most likely. So that's my problem with this whole thing, though, is to bring in this many people in one transfer window. Number one, what is that going to be like? An 800% increase in transfers over the last.
But this is the problem. We needed to replace Dembele already. Okay. So we needed to do that. We need to replace both fullbacks. So that's only three players.
But we've kind of tried. Well, we haven't really tried it left back, but we brought Serge in thinking, you know, he'd bring Trippier competition. And I honestly agree with Lucas. I think Serge still has a future with us.
Okay.
But he just needs a run in.
Okay,
he needs a run of games. I don't think necessarily we need to buy a starting right back, unless it's Juan Bissaka.
Well, we say we need one left back and we need a central midfielder. And then Erickson replaces Erickson.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's what I said. I agree with the point you're making of if we sell Erickson, at least we're getting the money to replace
Prince
him.
Erickson,
the rest of the positions, we pretty much have to fill with the money that we've been saving over.
We're going to have Toby money. We're going to have Toby money.
We'll only get $25 million for Toby, right?
Yeah.
Or it could be like give him a new bumper and then get rid of it more.
But he's not willing to sign a new bump. That's
like
the whole point.
It's like one of those NBA sign and trade deals, if you get my drift.
Only getting $25 million for him is going to be
$25 million will give you a good fullback.
I don't know. City's paying $50 million for fullbacks.
Yeah,
to sit on the bench.
Because they're stupid, basically.
They're winning fucking titles, so.
Yeah, but it's because they got five of them.
Well, it brings us in another fullback that's a project,
does by spending that much, it makes other teams value their players more closer to those numbers.
Yeah.
So it's just fucking the teams in our position where we don't really spend that much money. But we need to.
Unless they get done for financial fair play and get like a $500 million
But even that, fine. That is a dent. That's a fucking drop in the bucket to the owners of City.
True, but if they get banned from the Champions League.
I don't think they will. PSG, every single person who is a legitimate soccer fan knows that they have broken massive rules in financial fair play and they got a fine.
Yeah.
And that was it. Yeah. A slap on the wrist. Of a bank of money that they have. Like, it doesn't matter. That's why they broke the rules.
Yeah.
Well, I think that we can all agree that it's going to be a mental window. It's going to be key. Whatever happens, this is going to be nuts. We're going to lose. Yeah, we're not even close to it yet, and we're already fielding questions on it. But I think we had such a depressing couple of weeks that it brought up, like, what are we going to do to fix this problem in the future? And
just put
I'm sorry that we're there now, but. But we do have an international break coming up a little bit in a week or so. We're not going to play next week, and then there's an international break for us. So let's we have a question on that. So let's field that question, and then we'll preview the Liverpool game.
Yeah, from Luke Lacey on Twitter, @Laces97. Will or should Poch refuse players to attend international duties? Examples, Kane, Dele, Rose, Winks, Trips, if fit. Just mentioned English guys there. Many just returned from injury and could be a big risk for the remainder of our season. I'll answer first because I usually don't get to actually answer the question because it gets going around. I don't think Poch will ever tell a player not to play for his country. Do I think he should? It's like such a hard thing to like determine, because I think every single player in the world, when they get called up, they want to play for their international squad, even if it's in a friendly. They want to go out, you know, they're friends with the guys on their international team. They've grown up with them. They want to go, you know, see them, not to mention just representing their country. Do I wish he would? Yes, 100%. I wish not one of our players went on this international break and just stayed in Barcelona or wherever the fuck they're going to be warm and just stayed together. But I don't see it happening.
In terms of English players, you can't. You basically can't. So what will happen is if you say to the English FA, oh, I don't want Harry Kane playing because he's a little bit injured, all they'll do is they'll send down the England medical staff. They'll have a look at him, and if they deem he's okay to play, he'll play. There's nothing to do with Poch, nothing we can do about it. That's in terms of the English players. As opposed to other international federations, I don't know. I don't know how that works. But in terms of England, it's happened before where managers like Wenger and Ferguson used to pull their players all the time, and that's why this rule came in. Because they, you know, Wenger's French, didn't give a shit about the England team. Ferguson's Scottish, didn't give a shit about the England team. So they used to pull their players all the time, especially for friendlies. So the English FA just went, nope. If we deem him fit enough to play, they'll play. So we really don't have a say in it.
The only other international players are probably Hugo, Sanchez, Toby, and
our whole team is international.
Actually, Davis.
Doesn't Lamella play for Argentina?
I don't think he got called up.
I don't think he'll get picked.
I don't think Foyth did this time either.
Foyth did get called up.
Did he?
Yes.
Son probably will. No, he'll be.
They probably don't have international games because they're in their actual, like.
These weekends are all designated as.
Yeah, but.
There might be friendlies that South Korea is playing.
If South Korea can't give that man a rest now, they can fuck off.
Do you not understand the Asian mentality? You can sleep when you're dead. It's like my parents told me. It's like, you played too much, whatever. You know, do homework type deal, so.
I didn't know that was just an Asian thing, because my parents told me that, too.
And look what you're at, look where you're at right now.
Same place you are, Tommy.
That is true.
To answer the question, I just don't see that we... It's not something that we do. We don't tell players not to play.
I don't think anybody does at this point.
No, maybe maybe Fergie did a sly, like, oh, you're a little hurt, aren't you? Yeah. To people back in the day.
In terms of England, you can't. But, that's what I'm saying.
But I just don't think it's the case anymore, and we just have too many players out there. I think at least this international break comes when we have a week break prior to that. Maybe that makes it a little bit better. But yeah, I wish we had more time together going into Liverpool. That's certainly the issue here. We have a huge game against Liverpool coming up.
So I saw the two games are against Czech Republic and Montenegro. So my only issue is, I told Joe about this. I wouldn't mind seeing some of them get a game in only because of this 3 week break. I don't want, and we'll talk about this at Liverpool, of course, but I just feel that.
Well, you might want to be all right now, don't you?
Unfortunately, yes.
They're in Barcelona.
So.
Again.
I want them to get a little bit of competition in them before Liverpool just. So their bodies are raring and ready to go.
Well, remember, Liverpool are going to have the same issue. They've got internationals in every position.
Yeah.
They're all going to be on international break. So they're going to have the same problem.
No, I don't know. It's just based on the current run of games. I know you say the current run of games doesn't have an impact in future games, but it's just I'm not too confident right now with how the squad's been going. So I'm like, yeah.
Well, I think that probably is a good place to wrap up the international break. Once again, we are taking a couple weeks off the podcast since we're not playing next week because of the FA Cup reschedule, and then the week after that for international break. So the next time that we're all going to be together to watch a game is going to be almost 3 weeks out. And that will be against Liverpool, so a gigantic match that we're looking towards. So currently, Liverpool sits in second place in the league with 73 points. That's 22 wins, 7 draws, 1 loss. Their most recent games was a win to Burnley, a draw to Everton, a win to Watford, a draw to Man United, and a draw to Munich. Upcoming, they're going to be playing Munich and Fulham prior to playing us, and after they play us, they'll be playing Southampton. So they're going to have an easy match before us, an easy match after us, but they're going to be playing fixtures around us. Their top goal scorer is currently Mohamed Salah with 17, Mane second with 14. Their top assist man is Andrew Robertson with 8. Salah second with 7. Their top rated player is the guy who Rick believes sucks, Virgil van Dijk with 7.54. Mane is 7.46 right behind him. That's all like sabermetric stats that get collected to determine the player rating. I looked it up on the site that I use.
It's the BABIP.
The last 5 times we've placed them, played them, most recently was a loss, a draw prior to that, a win prior to that, and 2 losses prior to that. So they've been getting the better of us. This is a road game. This is a little nerve-wracking, I think, for us. What do you think, Kevin?
Yeah, we never won there in the Premier League, right?
2011, 2-1.
In a league game?
Yep.
Yep.
That was the only time.
Van der Vaart and somebody else. I forget who scored, but
so once in the Premier League era, and then that when was the last time before that.
I think like 1990.
In the league, because I think we won like 2 cup games or something there.
Yeah, we went like 76 years without winning.
But until this past weekend in the league, like I watched them a lot because I like a few of their guys as much as I hate their fans. And they play usually play an exciting brand of soccer. Salah has not looked great, though, in, like, probably four league games. Mane's been the guy. He's scored more goals from open play than anybody else in the league so far this year. I think it's 12 of his 14. And they get their fullbacks forward. You said Robertson's leading with their assists, and then Trent Alexander-Arnold is also ridiculously good. They have two really great young fullbacks. I don't, even with Salah not playing well, it's really hard to see us getting 3 points out of this. I think even one would be, like, I would take one as a win, obviously, going to Anfield. But we have, I think it's 21 days from the last match off. Even with the international break, I mean, our guys should come back and be refreshed and ready to, you know, get going, hopefully. I don't fucking know what's going to happen. But, yeah, I just think they're ridiculously good offensively and defensively. I know Rick likes to talk shit about Virgil van Dijk, but I think they have more clean sheets than goals given up in the league this year, which is pretty fucking ridiculous. That might have been before this past week, because I think they gave up two.
They've given up 17 total goals.
Like, in the league?
Yeah.
I think they have...
Their goal differential is a plus 51 right now. They've scored 68, and they've only given up 17 goals. This is a defense that was better than our defense 2 years ago when we were the best defense in the league.
Right. And, they're doing it against everybody as well. It's not like they're just destroying the bottom of the table and, squeaking by the top sides. They're just really fucking good. As much as people hate Klopp, like, he's clearly doing something right there. They're going to be really tough, and we're going to really have to show up and play our absolute best game probably of the year if we want to get any points out of this, I think.
Yeah. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Got to win the midfield, because we got Wijnaldum. They got Wijnaldum. They got Henderson, Salah, Sané. Henderson
sucks.
Have your turn.
Keita.
Yes. So they just have too many weapons. Thankfully, Dyer came back. He's got to have an amazing game, in my opinion, for us to even get a point. Like last year, I would love to get two dubious or allegedly dubious penalties to piss them off. But, I mean, regardless of the fact that Liverpool have bottled the title, so to speak, they're dangerous. They got a lot of weapons. We have Ali coming back. Dyer's coming back. Kane's kind of came back. I don't anticipate... I mean, this is not going to be easy. It's not because it's at Anfield. It's...
because they're fucking, like, one of the probably top three teams in the world.
It sucks. And I would say this right now. If we get a point, I'd be more than happy with it. I'm sure if that's going to happen.
If we get a point, it's fucking cocks out. Like, all day.
Full
erection, like, probably need to go to the hospital.
You might be on a registry in the afternoon. So, hopefully Hugo will be staying on his head like Dortmund. I don't know if that's going to happen just because of our wingback situation. I don't know.
I don't see our wingbacks being able to hold off Mane in this.
Well, the other thing is I'm praying to God that they don't advance too far up. I'd rather play...
You're going to have to pray to more than God.
I know.
It's what they do.
I don't want to see Trippier or Davies anywhere near
this
team.
Well, the thing with Trippier, though, is, like, you know, slow as fuck, regardless of what my friend said. So, because of that, I'm like, Monty's going to fucking burn him more times than I have... more fingers than I have on both of my hands. So, it's... I'd rather have Ori, but I know he's problematic. This is this could be a nightmare.
Tommy sounds in pain.
What are your thoughts, Rick? Let's give Rick the mic and hear his thoughts on this.
They have a squad depth advantage over us. That's the problem. They are really good defensively because they play defensively. It's weird. They play defensively, so they don't let in goals, and then they have a front three that just score like crazy. Their midfield is actually not that great. You talk about Henderson and Keita, they are not good. Henderson is awful, and Keita is worse. But they don't use their midfield, that's the thing. They don't pass and move and do that kind of football. They're not possession based. They basically get the ball up as quickly as they can to their front three, and then we just try and score and rely on their very, very good defence. Yeah, we're basically screwed in this game. I can't see us getting anything out of this game. But I'm not too worried about that. This is not the game that's going to decide whether we make top four or not. This game and the Man City game, we can probably write both of them off as long as we win everything else.
Yeah.
So I'm not too worried about it. As for Klopp, I hate that motherfucker because his antics, complaining about every little thing, the snow, the weather, the grass, the wind.
The grass is the best.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Running onto the pitch, arguing with referees, and Potts gets a 2-game ban. I don't get it. I don't get what kind of hold he has on the FA, but he should have been fucking...
It's a caressing hold.
It's because he's a personality. I mean, look at Jose. I mean, he fucking talks shit about every referee and every decision everybody's ever made
and
nothing.
And the fucking media are stroking his balls every fucking
time. Well, it's because
time.
They give him something to write about, just like Klopp. I mean, even when they do well or do terribly, the headlines are always something ridiculous about Klopp.
Right. I'm on a slight tangent. I want to get this out there because this is becoming extremely annoying. But whenever anybody loses a game, or when everybody, whenever a team goes a couple of games without winning, or they get knocked out of a competition or something, everybody and their brother start using the word bottle. They're bottling it. Shut up.
I mean, they did have a 7-point lead. Like,
it's a bit of a choke job thus far.
Yes, you're right, but it's the phrase that I hate.
Do you hate it because everybody says we bottle everything?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I use it. I use it against all those fucking assholes.
I think we should stop using it, and I think everybody else should stop using it, because I think it's just such a cliche of itself.
Man. It kills people to tell them that you bottled something.
I know, but...
So it's just like the easiest way to get under somebody's skin. It's kind of on the internet.
It's kind of this natural trajectory of the game now, though. Like, you have these moments where you do lose a key match, you drop a lot of points at once, and it's just the trajectory that the game tends to go. Yeah, and we've just created a term for it that we can wield like as a weapon against other fans.
That's the thing. People are implicating that you bottled it, that you somehow were scared and lost the game and didn't play well or whatever. But you can lose the game for 100 different reasons, not because you bottled it.
Liverpool are bottling it.
I mean, we'll put it this way. Man United lost to Arsenal the other day. They didn't bottle it. They actually had more possession.
Fucking
more shots.
Bottled it for us, fucking assholes.
Well, they had more possession, they had more shots, they had more, they hit the crossbar, they hit the post. They didn't bottle the game,
the ball didn't go the way they wanted to.
That's the thing. They lost the game, not because they bottled it.
Because they choked.
It's just a fucking stupid fucking... cliche term. I wish people would stop using it. I'm sorry.
God, can you imagine...
Like the word moist?
If we had a 7-point lead at any point during the season and didn't win the league, we'd never hear the end of it. We were not within more than like 5 points of Leicester, and we bottled that somehow. I don't even understand that one. But yeah, I get what you're saying with the word bottled. Like, it's definitely overused. But in this case, having a 7-point lead when they did, I don't know. I'm fucking going hard on Liverpool fans.
I do not want to hear you about going hard on Liverpool fans.
Well, let's talk about the keys of this match. Like, what is our strategy here? Do we go with our fast wing backs? I hope. Who plays in the midfield here to try and control 100% this?
100% has to be Danny and Serge. Davis and Trippier will get fucking annihilated by
which
Mane Poch and
will
Salah.
Probably defer to.
Yeah, I'm sure he will. Especially coming off of international break, he's going to think, all right. Trippier can be whipping balls into the box, not get back and cover. I guess it'd be Mane, right?
Yep.
And Salah will be fucking tearing up the other side of the pitch.
So do
and
we then do three at the
you
back?
You got fucking Firmino in the middle, who I got a feeling Rick probably thinks isn't good, but he's actually. I'm not saying he's like amazing or anything, but.
Well, he's one of the better technical players.
Yeah, like. But I feel like he shows up in spurts, like which he'll probably show up against us and score like two or three. But I just don't see how we stop their attack.
I think the only way we're going to get goals is probably counterattack. We got to stop it in the midfield. I anticipate Dier and Sissoko playing. Both of them have to, like I said, have to have great games. Got to be bulldogs from the midfield. I think what Son, Eriksen, Ali are probably going to be the front midfield, of course. Depending on how the game goes, I do want to see either Mora or Lamella feature because of either their speed or physicality. It's a rough one to think about, and it's a few weeks away.
I was going to say, it's even harder to talk about when we're 19 days away.
We don't know who's going to get hurt on international break. We don't know.
You're killing me here.
Maybe they'll have some injuries on international break. They have
we're not lucky enough
too.
Let's hope.
They have matches to play between now and then, which impacts things a little bit. I think what sucks for us in this is that, like, we're going to have these games in hand, but everybody else is going to have points on the board that knocks us out of the top of the table and
potentially
mentally.
Points on board.
Yeah, potential points on the board that could knock us out of the top four on the table, and that could weigh heavily mentally on us.
Yes and no.
For this game.
Well, aside from Man City, we can recoup points against Crystal Palace, Huddersfield, Brighton, etc.
Yeah.
So.
Have to recoup points, not could.
But it's have to, and
I know,
and it's from a behind position. Assuming that's what happens,
sometimes that's not bad though. You know what you got to do.
Yeah,
you know,
it just depends on where the games are stacked.
Right
around Champions League.
If was it last year or the year before? God, I need Nathan here. We were like the last game of the week for like 4 weeks in a row.
Yeah, we kept playing on
Monday. We just kept knowing what we needed to do.
Oh, no, that was 15-16. Like, we played West Brom, Chelsea.
Right. And it felt like because we knew exactly what we needed to do, we just went out and did it.
No, we fucked up against those two teams, though.
Especially when their problem right now seems to be complacency.
Knowing that, all right, we got to fucking go.
Yeah, when you know what you have to do, then you can't be complacent.
But that should be every game from here on out.
Yeah. You would hope. But I think that's probably a good point to go to predictions for this one. So let's start predictions with Kevin on this game.
I don't think I've ever predicted a loss on this podcast before. But I'm going to predict one today. I think we lose 3-1.
That's what I wrote.
And Harry's going to get the goal.
I wrote that too.
I just don't see... I can't see any. I'm sure by the closer we get them, all right, fuck it, we're gonna fucking pull some crazy shit off. But right now, the mood I'm in after Saturday, the multiple group chats that I'm in, Twitter, everything being completely negative, it's hard to see any kind of positive out of this.
Tommy,
I wrote the same thing with Kevin had 1-3 Kane. Barring an act of God or some injuries, I just don't see it happening, unfortunately.
Well, there's a lot of time for that those acts of God to happen, so we could hope
for
that.
Did you see Southampton beating us?
Was that an act of God, though?
It was an act of Ward-Prowse.
Unfortunately, yes.
So what's your prediction, Rick?
Oh, we're winning 3-0.
Imagine.
Son, Kane, and Lamella.
Son, Kane, and Lamella. Okay. I hope you're right on that. I'm going to go with the fuck it. You know what? I think we can overcome this. This is where we step up to the plate. Like, this is Chelsea on New Year's Eve. This is or New Year's Day, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, Chelsea on New Year's Day. This is going to be the game where we step up and say, like, you know what? We belong in the top of the table. And whatever's happened, well, we haven't been able to play. We're going to get our points here and show that we're legit. And I think we're going to win 2-1. I'm going to give a goal to Carey on that. And I think a goal's going to come from Sissoko. I think Sissoko's finally going to score his goal.
You do have some grandiose dreams there.
Yeah, well, I think sometimes you have to dream. Can you imagine if that happened?
I'm going to finally make another appearance at the bar. I feel like it's been, like, forever that weekend for Liverpool. And if that happens, I'm going to have to apologize in advance to my wife because that's going to be one hell of a day. I don't know if I'll ever come home. I'll just stay at the Atlantic forever, never leave.
You'll be carried out.
Oh, no, I'm staying forever. There's a bed downstairs. Yeah. Like, I literally don't have to leave.
Well, any other thoughts on this game before we go to stadium update?
Anthony, I hope you proved me wrong.
Okay. Well, I'm just being hopeful because...
I know.
I'm usually the pessimist, and I'm going to go hopeful this time.
You're an optometrist.
Okay, well... So, Rick, we do have a stadium update on this, don't we?
Yeah, we finally have the news we've all been waiting for. Our next home game will be at White Hart Lane, new White Hart Lane.
As long as test events go according to plan. Well,
as long as the test events go fine, which they should.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
The test events are a, they're a requirement, but they're... You know, most everything is signed off. You just have to do these test events just to get the fireman certificate. So it's not like, you know, unless 50 people die in the test event, you know, in the crowd.
I think if one died, that would probably be enough. Yeah, I don't think we need 50.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be an issue with that. So the first test event is on the 26th. It's an under-18 game.
Imagine being those guys, right? They get to play the first fucking game.
Under-18 Spurs against Southampton. Awesome on the 26th. And then on the 30th, there's going to be a Legends game. But...
Isn't that the day before Liverpool?
Or
is it the day of Liverpool? It's got to be the day
31st
before,
31st is
right?
Liverpool.
Yeah. Yep.
And I think Catherine may have mentioned that in her segment.
She may well have done. But she may or may not have mentioned that we do have a Legends team already at Spurs. But this is going to be a slightly different Legends team where they're actually inviting people, inviting players that we all know.
Michael Dawson.
Like, possibly Dawson. I heard rumours about Teddy Sheringham and Klinsmann.
Ooh. Well, who are we playing?
It's either going to be Inter Milan or Bayern Munich.
Yeah, and Milan, we have like a few guys who have played for both clubs.
Yes.
Nicola Birdie. Stefan Dalmas.
Yeah, it's not going to be the usual Legends team. It's going to be like an invited Legends.
Is there going to be any way to see that?
Probably
not, right?
If the tickets are being sold, they're £10 each.
Well,
£10 each
for us.
I don't know whether it'll be televised. I don't
Doubt
know.
It, right?
Don't make a DVD of it.
We're good at that.
I've heard no rumors about any televisual coverage. There usually isn't in these kind of cases,
right.
But I don't know. So those are the two test events. And then the first game was dependent on the Brighton-Millwall FA Cup game. If Brighton win, then our first game will be Crystal Palace. on the 3rd of April. If Brighton lose, our first game will be either the 6th or the 7th of April against Brighton. So it's either going to be the 3rd or the 6th or 7th. It's the 6th or the 7th depending on when the Champions League game is scheduled. If it's scheduled on the Tuesday, then it'll be the 6th. If it's scheduled on the Wednesday, it'll be the 7th. That's why that's that date. So we've got three dates that it could possibly be the first opening, but it's going to definitely be one of those three dates. So it's the news we've all been waiting for. The stadium is, right now, it's 99.9% complete. They're doing all the groundwork. They're doing all lots of... you know, stuff with vegetation, trees, and stuff like that. So, all minor stuff.
Quick question. I heard there was an... I want you to clarify about the whole corner thing, because apparently there wasn't room for one of the corner posts.
It's just some bullshit. They've been testing that. Okay. They've tested it at the training ground. They've tested it at the stadium. It's not a problem.
I mean, it doesn't fucking matter for us. Eriksen can't get it past the first man anyways.
Or Trippier.
Actually, it has more space in our corners than... than it does at Old Trafford. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen people take corners at Old Trafford.
It slopes pretty quickly.
It slopes and it's really awkward, but people still make corners. And we have more space. So it's a media, you know, thing. And it's bullshit. But yeah, really exciting. Stadium's almost complete. And it'll be 100% ready when the game is scheduled.
And we need it to be. Because we got to win all the rest of our home games.
Fight and win.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
this could be like, this could be stuff of legend. No, just legend.
Oh,
it will be a legend, not legends.
Oh, and people are a lot of people are complaining that they're making people pay for these events. But the money goes to the Tottenham Hotspur Foundation. Doesn't go to Tottenham, doesn't go to Daniel Levy, doesn't go to anybody, but the Tottenham Hotspur Foundation...
I mean, it's like fucking £10, right?
It's £10, like, but they have to have a monetary value to test the ticketing system properly. They're required to do that.
I mean, I guess they could have made it £1.
They could have made it £1. But it's
of all the things to complain about, sorry, I know I'm like an American over here, like no connection to this at all, other than I'm a Spurs fan, but like...
Well, we can't give back to the local community, because right. The local community obviously have been putting up with...
What is the
a
capacity?
A lot of construction.
A lot of construction and shit like
How
that.
How much of the capacity is open, do you know?
For the under 18 game, it's going to be 30,000. For the Legends game, it's going to be 45,000.
So...
I mean, obviously, for the first game, it'll be
full.
62,062.
Correct.
And it will be 62,062.
It will probably be...
It'll probably be more. Somehow, people fucking...
A lot of executive suites.
If you don't know, the stadium is actually cashless. So don't bother taking cash to the stadium. It's all credit cards.
That's interesting.
The ticket system is all automated and
tap
everything
and pay.
Else. So, it's going to be a fabulous occasion. And I've actually requested, you know, people on the podcast will know I've actually been missing a lot of games because I've been working. But I've made sure I've requested these two dates off, so I'm definitely make the bar.
Hopefully your boss will grant them to you.
Yes, hopefully my boss will. I'm looking at my boss's husband right now.
My last question. We're good for Champions League, though. Like, there's no issues with UEFA.
But that's the thing. This is why we're having these odd dates, because UEFA, a stipulation for UEFA said you must play a league game before you play a Champions League game.
Right.
The Champions League game cannot be the first game at White Hart Lane.
Right.
So that's why. Actually, yeah, that's a good point. Something we actually have to really thank Crystal Palace FC and Brighton FC. For all their help in this, because they've been very accommodating in letting us schedule or reschedule this before our first Champions League quarterfinal game. So, thank you to Crystal Palace and thank you to.
Matilda Collywobbles would have had a hand in it.
Well, they apparently bent over backwards to really help with the scheduling of this. So, thank you to both teams.
Well, this is a second good piece of news this week with the Dortmund win, I think.
Sandwich the bad news with...
Yeah, so we have some good news, a lot of bad news, and then some good news. And that's kind of our podcast, and that's how we're going to have to leave you guys for the next couple weeks, unless something miraculous happens and we have to come back and talk, and then we will. But we expect to see you in just probably after the Liverpool game. So thanks to Rick for editing and sound, Charlie for the music, Kevin for social media, Tommy for the back page update, Catherine for her, Spurs Ladies update, Victoria for the logo, and as always, the Atlantic Bar and Grill for the use of the recording space. Hit the subscribe button and rate us a review on iTunes if you like our pod, or check us out wherever you get your podcasts. Check us out on Twitter and Facebook at 4 Star Spurs and our website at 4starspurs.com. Come on, you Spurs.